Begin with the recording. So the recording has already begun. Now we'll begin with the proceedings for the live streaming. Amit. Sir, we are live. Arfina, please do with the proceedings.
Okay, sir. A very good afternoon to everyone. My name is Arfina Ara Hussain, and I am a research intern at ICS. On behalf of ICS, I welcome you all to today's Wednesday seminar. Today's topic of seminar is Joint Operation Capabilities of the Western Traitor Command of the People's Liberation Army. The PLA Western Traitor Command, WTC, military exercises highlights their efforts at integrating information command between services to enhance the capabilities of different operational and support units to achieve assault options. The PLA Army Aviation Units are being increasingly used to conduct operations near the border areas. There is an increased emphasis on short and targeted operations by the WTC alongside defensive tactics such as air defense, early warning, and reconnaissance. Today, the speaker for today's discussion is Dr. M.S. Pratibha. She is an associate fellow at the East Asia Center in Manohar Parikar Institute for Defense Studies and Analysis. She researches on nuclear policy and strategy of China, China's elite politics, military and strategic force, modernization, and East Asian security dynamics. Our chair for today's discussion is Commodore Venugopal Menon. He has served in the Indian Navy for 30 years in various operational roles, including warfare and including commands at sea, training, and staff assignments at naval headquarters. He is a specialist in anti-submarine warfare and is an alumni of Defense Service Staff College Wellington, College of Naval Warfare, Mumbai, and Asia Pacific Center for Security Studies, Honolulu, USA. He writes in various forums on maritime security issues. He is a distinguished member of Chennai Center for China Studies and non-resident senior fellow at the International Development Security Corporation, Manila. Before I hand over to the chair, I would like to ask all the participants to follow some housekeeping rules. All participants can be muted during the presentation. Questions can be posted in the chat box during the event, or you can raise your hand during the interactive session and after the presentation. You will be called upon to unmute yourself and ask questions. That's all. I hand over to the floor to Commodore, sir, to take the proceeding forward. Over to you, sir.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I hope you're able to hear me. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Good afternoon once again. My thanks to Institute of Chinese Studies, New Delhi, for giving me this opportunity to chair this session. Thanks for the generous introduction. I have no claim to fame, just a normal observer in these studies. Well, Theater Command has been the flavor of the season since 2020, when the new CDS took over, General Bipin Rawat took over, and that's the time when everybody got to, you know, hear this term, Theater Command, in various forums. Incidentally, General Rawat is my classmate at the academy, so I know him too very well. May his soul rest in peace. So I will start off with certain basics, you know, before we go on to this Western Theater Command of the PLA as such. Now, in what is a theater to start with? In warfare, a theater is an area in which important military events occur or are in progress. A theater can include the entirety of the air, space, land, and sea, that is, or that may potentially become involved in war operations. For example, Second World War, you would have heard the term Atlantic Theater, Pacific Theater. This is basically geographic concepts. Now, what is a theater command? A theater command, in simple terms, is intended to bring better synergy between two or three branches of the armed forces. It will be a unified command and headed by a single commander in place of, in lieu of separate commands for the Army, Navy, and Air Force. This single commander will, in effect, operationally control all the assets of the three or two services. He will be entrusted with looking after security challenges in a specified geographical territory. Besides the operational synergies, the theater command system will also contribute to more streamlining of costs and a leaner fighting force. Now, what are the strategic imperatives of a theater command? One is power projection. Next is security umbrella for allies, expeditionary capabilities, the need for overseas or necessity for overseas military bases. Now, when I take the example of a theater command, there is the most significant theater command which I can quote to you is the American system. In the US, the theater commands are all also referred as unified combatant commands. These commands are organized based on geographical basis, which gives an area of responsibility for a theater command, or on a functional basis. Functional basis would mean special operations or cyber or space warfare or cyber warfare. Currently, there are 7 combatant commands which are designated on geographical basis and 4 functional commands. The geographic basis combatant command example is Indo-Pacific Command, which most of you are familiar with. The chain of command for operational purposes in the US goes from the President of the United States to the Secretary of Defense to the combatant commanders directly. Now, what are the essentials of a theater command when we look from the perspective of ideal situation? What is that? There should be adequate assets to stage operations in a theater. Second, professional military education at each stage of military career of officers to do justice to joint operations assignments when they are delegated in a position. There should be a well-tailored career profile structure. In the United States currently, they're facing a situation where there is a complex requirement in career profile for the individual service and the theater command. For example, if you take USS Abraham Lincoln, the aircraft carrier, super carrier, I'm sure the best should go to command that ship. Whereas the conflicting requirement would be as to where this officer can be positioned in a theater command. Both are important. So these are the complexities which are arising in the US. And many senators have called for a revisit to the Goldwater-Nichols Act, wherein the command structure was reformed in the United States. Now I will go to China. The theater commands were reorganized in China in Feb 2016. In the People's Republic of China, theater commands are joint commands responsible for developing strategy, plans, and policy specific to an assigned area of responsibility. Currently, the PRC is subdivided into 5 theater commands: Eastern, Southern, Western, Northern, and Central, to provide the Central Military Commission of the Chinese Communist Party, though extensive, though not exclusive command authority over the assigned regions. See the dichotomy there. Chinese theater commands have been likened to the geographic combatant commands of the US military. However, Chinese theater commands do not extend beyond the nation's border, unlike the US. This is another significant difference. In the US, the Indo-Pacific Command extends from Hawaii all the way to the west coast of India, which means the theater command includes other countries as well in their jurisdiction, unlike the Chinese concept. The Western Theater Command is headquartered at Chengdu, is responsible for the western half of China, including the nation's borders with India and Russia. During peacetime, these units under the Western Theater Command largely are employed in countering perceived separatist or terrorist threats. Each theater command is led by both a military commander who is responsible for operations and an equally ranked political commissar who is responsible for ideological functions of the command in keeping with the visions of the CCP. See the dichotomy again. Clash of interests. Another factor of the theater command is that under each theater command are the single service headquarters for the Army, Navy, Air Force, which adhere to a dual command structure, another dichotomy. Each service headquarters reports to the theater commander and the service national headquarters. See the duplicity of command structure. However, during the time of operations, there will be a singular command under the theater command. You cannot have a separate command structure during peacetime and a separate structure during op time. Integration is very important so that the concepts are clearly, or the doctrines are well structured. Operational control over the ICBMs and long range ballistic missiles remains with the Chinese National Command Authority and not with the theater commander. So what the Chinese theater commands lack? They do not have a network of overseas bases. They do not have expeditionary and sea lift capabilities. They do not have a professional military education at all levels. And the ability of the military hierarchy to conduct joint operations remains a suspect, in my view. With that brief introduction, I welcome today's speaker, Dr. Pradibha, who is an associate fellow at the East Asia Center, Manohar Parikar Institute for Defense Studies and Analysis. A nice introduction has already been given by the MC. I can only say that she is a distinguished researcher, an analyst of repute, and I will not steal the thunder from her anymore. I will hand over the mic to Dr. Pradibha. Over to you. Thank you.
Thank you, Commodore, for that warm welcome. Let me thank Institute for Chinese Studies for welcoming me here to speak on the subject of PLA Western Theater Command. I would like to thank Professor Alka Acharya. Specifically, she's been my teacher during my MPhil days, and I have always have very warm memories of her. So let me just jump into the the topic. As the Commodore said, have discussed, this is a very complex topic, and the Chinese are trying to develop a command system which with Chinese characteristics, if I might say, to somehow cater to the Chinese threats and you know, capabilities. So as we have heard so far, the PLA has a dual system. It is trying to develop joint operations capability. It is trying to train in an integrated fashion. But before I get into the nitty-gritties of it, I would like to give a broad, you know, basic framework to through which we can see the PLA joint operations capability. Why is China pushing for such a capability? So there are a lot of writings in the Chinese sources, but if you take the most important points or factors that they believe is crucial to push Chinese PLA into a joint operations capability is that they would like to keep up with the world trends, the trends in the world military. So what the rest of us call the world military revolution. So they believe that the best militaries of the world are moving towards joint operation capability. So the Chinese PLA cannot be left behind on such an occasion. And not only that, the future of warfare, the way warfare is being fought in the future is being increasingly fought under the joint operations capability. Joint operations are being conducted in future warfare. So on the one hand is that the technological revolution and the military technology and the military theory and military tactics and strategy is increasingly moving towards joint operations. And even the war which is being fought are fought under the conditions of joint operations. So these two major trends, or let's say directions of war, it seems to be influencing the PLA and how they look at warfare and how they believe that they should prepare and win a war. Now, we saw that before 2015, there was a consensus within the system, within the Chinese leadership, that the PLA was not ready the PLA was not ready to fight and win a war. Why that they believe that? Because when they did the assessment of the PLA, they believe that the PLA operational units were training in silos. They didn't have a common understanding or coordinated operations which were happening between different operational units. Each services were developing their own strategy, their own capabilities, their own understanding of warfare. So there was no coordination between the units, between the services, as to how to prepare for war in a more unified manner. What they would have wanted was to have a very lean and capable and effective PLA, which coordinates, all the services are coordinating with each other and have a unified plan as to how to counter an adversary. But they clearly realized that was not the case when it came to PLA's capability. So in 2015, you see this massive change or massive reforms which are being implemented. And one part of that implementation is the theater command system. Now, I don't want to go too much into the theater command system, as we have heard from the Commodore. But what I would like to say is that, one, the theater command was implemented keeping in mind few factors. So one is that the PLA believes that PLA is not fighting against a single service. It is actually fighting the whole system, which they call it system-to-system confrontation. They're not fighting a single military service. They're fighting a whole system, which is an adversary, which has a sophisticated, integrated joint operation system, joint operational command, where all the services are connected and coordinated, had a unified system, and all these services are able to conduct an operation together. So they realize that they are facing a system rather than a single service. So one of the reasons for the theater command to be implemented is for China to have a joint command in its own, joint command in its own theater. So a theater command is actually a joint command, which faces, as we've seen, in different strategic directions against different strategic threats. Now, why a theater command is necessary? Because the Chinese also believe that they don't have the battlefield awareness. So if you don't have coordination between different units, you are not able to come with an operational plan which can use both offensive and defensive tactics. So for that kind of higher level thinking of war, you need a coordinated joint operations capability. Now, if you come to the WTC per se, if you compare to all the theater commands, WTC is a bit different from the rest of the theater commands. Why? Because you have the Tibet and Xinjiang military districts, which have an elevated status. You have long borders and very difficult terrain. Even after 2015, where each theater command is a joint command, and the purpose of the theater command was to reduce the influence of the PLA army in operational planning, but have other services have equal inputs in operational planning. But in the WTC, the PLA army still exerts considerable influence in the operational plans. And if you look at even the air capability of the WTC, it was much more limited before 2015 military reforms. There was a lack of training in very high altitude regions. Mostly the PLA trained in the plains, in the winter regions. Only in the summer regions, they used to train in high altitude areas. So there were a lot of difficulties in terms of having a coordinated training in high altitude areas. And in addition to having a lack of joint operations capability, especially which was so needed in the WTC because of the long borders and the difficult terrain and the limited capabilities of each service when facing an adversary in the WTC, which in the case of WTC is a conventional adversary would be India. Now, as the chair talked about the dual command system, I just would like to emphasize the dual command system is not something which is, it makes things difficult for China. I think it was done to reduce the responsibilities of the military headquarters, military services headquarters, and the previous, big humongous organizations, which were saddled with too many responsibilities, such as developing the individual services as well as developing the operational capability of the forces. I think this dual command system was implemented to simplify the PLA so that the theater command can exclusively focus on training and operations, which is the combat, and the military services can exclusively focus on developing the capabilities of their individual military services. So they can, the responsibilities are divided, so they can each focus exclusively on their own responsibilities. They are not saddled. For example, a theater command is not saddled with administrative issues, or the military services are not saddled with combat preparedness. So each has their own area of responsibility. Therefore, I believe that it makes it much easier, much faster, and more clarity over the responsibilities of the organizations. So I don't necessarily think that it complicates for the PLA in terms of combat preparedness, given how the organization was much more cumbersome before. Actually, it makes it much easier for the PLA to conduct operations. Overall, if you look at the WTC, these are the challenges that you would find in terms of PLA trying to conduct a war, not just conduct a war, but win a war. So if you look at the joint operations capability, they have focused on a few issues. One is have the WTC focus exclusively on integrated joint training, specifically between the Air Force and the PLA Army. Why? Because the PLA Air Force has its own limitations in the WTC, PLA Army has its own limitations in the WTC. So the PLA Theater Command came up with the idea is that you, once you integrate the capabilities of these two services, you are able to use each other's services in a much more efficient manner. Until they develop a weapon system and capabilities which are far more able to give them the kind of range and reconnaissance and early warning, they can use, in the meantime, they can use the capabilities of each other much more in an optimal manner. So if you look at the WTC joint operations capability, you see that before 2015, there was an assessment that the WTC was facing a lack of air superiority against the adversary along the borders. They were not using effective understanding of offensive and defensive air capability. So, for example, they might have certain fighters, but they were not focusing on how to use defensive air capability in order to give the PLA some level of early reconnaissance and early warning so that they can carry out early strikes. So these are very important for the WTC because it reduces the decision-making time, it reduces the reaction time, and it reduces the opportunity for the adversary to have any kind of surprise attacks on their deployments or their assets in the WTC. They also realized that they needed weapons and equipment which can weather hostile environment, including the troops. For example, not just acclimatization, but also training in high altitude areas, camping there for a long period of time, then having a communication system which can effectively communicate between different units, and also not just training of certain PLA border defense troops, but also army aviation troops, radar troops, reconnaissance troops, and also special forces and combined arms brigade. So all these different operational units have to perform in a coordinated manner in the WTC. That's the only way that PLA can win a war the kind of threat that they believe they're facing in the WTC, that's they believe that they can win a war by using such coordinated, coordinated fashion. Now, if you look at the theater command and the joint operational capability, if you take these two things together, what are the kind of ideas that the WTC looking at when trying to enhance the joint operations capability? One is that they are developing the joint operational capability to suppress the firepower of the adversary, to suppress the air superiority of the adversary, because they believe that in any, in future warfare, air dominance is so necessary to win a war. In fact, they believe that one of the reasons why there is, there are a lot of issues with the Russian capabilities during this Syrian war was that Russia never focused on gaining air dominance in the theater. So they believe that air dominance is very necessary to win a war in any theater command and especially in WTC. And for that, you need air defenses, early warning and reconnaissance capabilities. Now, how do they try to achieve it? One is that, as I said, not only the forces have to cover a large border area, but the terrain is very hostile. So the way in which they try to maintain air superiority along with airstrike capabilities is for the PLA to raise, use its capabilities to have battlefield awareness of the situation, which is by integrating the air defenses, air defense units of its army and the air defense and the operational command units of its air force. For example, the PLA Army Aviation Air Defenses doesn't have the range, long range, to detect any kind of incoming targets. But the PLA Air Force has a longer range, but it doesn't have accurate reading. So what the PLA has done is to share the air defense network of the PLA Air Force and the PLA Army so that each can use their capabilities. For example, the PLA Army can use the range of the PLA Air Force and the PLA Air Force can use the accuracy of the PLA Army. So that now it is possible to have some level of early warning and reconnaissance capabilities for the WTC. Now, there are other capabilities and technologies which are also a part of the joint operational capability of the WTC, which is to establish a common network for the forces. So each operational unit have access or they can communicate with each other in a much faster fashion. The joint commander that way has a range. He has an understanding of the whole theater, which units are positioned where, how to bring certain units to the front line or certain units to give support to the frontline troops. What are the operational units are available? What are the kind of operational units that are not available to the WTC? So by having a common network joint operational command, the joint commander will have an entire idea of what is happening, where his troops are positioned, have a battlefield awareness over the period of, let's say, if there was a war breaks or over the period of the war, the development of the war, the joint commander has an understanding of how his troops are positioned. Now, what does this have an impact? This can have an impact in terms of optimizing firepower and strike options. The joint commander can decide quickly what kind of fire options are available, how to put those fire options either in an offensive or defensive fashion. What are the troops can provide, early warning capabilities at that time. So joint commander has an understanding and he can able to communicate with the troops with a joint network or let's say data link technologies. He can have access. The joint operational command of the WTC has the entire data set into its, command that they have. Each individual services have data of all the other services which are positioned in the WTC. So various technologies are being developed to enable such connectivity and coordination between operational units. Now, it's going to take a long time for the WTC to achieve joint operational capability in a comprehensive fashion. So it depends on their science and technology development. It depends on their innovation capability. It depends on how fast they are able to achieve information conditions or how far they're able to develop their IT capabilities for their troops. How far they're able to develop their communication network and data link technologies for their troops. It all depends on in the next, let's say, 10 years, how they're able to develop these capabilities. But suffice to say that some level of joint operational capability has been achieved between, let's say, the Air Force and the PLA Army. Whether there is a comprehensive joint operational capability, it remains to be seen. And as I said, it depends on how they're able to push the coordination of these different operational units. There are a lot of challenges that comes with such a coordination between military services. And there is a lot of challenges when it comes to even focusing on the integrated training. But I can say that they are making incremental changes to the joint operational capability. Now, what does it, in what way that it would help PLA to win wars? One, as I said before, it enables the joint commanders to coordinate operations. It also enables the joint command to understand the strength and weaknesses of the different troops. Not only that, this joint operational capabilities are based on the strength and weaknesses of the adversary. So not just strength and weaknesses of your own troops, but it also depends on your strength and weaknesses of your adversary. So the WTC can fashion different options according to the strength and weakness of the adversary. They can train according to that. It makes them more understanding of the how the war might develop between the two two different troops. It gives them an insight into how to in where to use offensive tactics or where to use defensive tactics and where to retreat or where to attack. So it gives a it gives them more and more nuanced options to conduct military operations. I would say that it has also increased the capability of special forces brigades to conduct joint operations with, let's say, combined arms brigade and reconnaissance units or other support units. They are increasingly being used in offensive training, offensive operations, training which resembles offensive operations, where they can use the army aviation units to be dropped behind the enemy lines and different kinds of strike options are being carried out according to the information available to the special forces brigades. In addition to that, they are sent to other operational units to understand the capabilities of other operational units. So they have their own understanding that how different units function in the WTC. Now, overall, it can optimize PLA strength and weaknesses, and it can make sure that the firepower and air defense are integrated in a fashion that if there is a lack in certain firepower, the other services can help achieve it. For example, if there was in terms of firepower or strike options, if the Air Force doesn't have the capability to do air to ground strikes, then those responsibilities can be given to the artillery. And as I said before, air defense can be coordinated by combining the air defense brigades to the PLA Air Force. Not only that helicopters can be increasingly used in more challenging terrain in order to transport, special forces brigades in certain areas. And so you see the PLA doing more and more helicopters, using more and more helicopters in its training and pushing them in uneven terrains and more challenging areas. So overall, if you see that the PLA Joint Operational Command is not just about having a dual system or developing certain units or developing joint operational capability between certain units. I would say that it is a sustained strategy to develop a comprehensive, integrated joint operational capabilities between different services in an entire theater command, and integrate the command and control of the region to have a joint operational capability in such a way that the data of all the training data, the geography, the units, the communication, everything can be integrated in a fashion that it gives them more control over how the military operations can be conducted. And if they sustain in developing their science and technology and reducing the innovation gap between China and, say, let's say, rest of the developed countries, this joint operation capability is going to increase and grow in sophistication. It can change the way the PLA is fighting war. It has tremendous implications for how Indian forces are faced or presented in the border regions. Thank you. I will stop here, and probably I will answer more questions or comments from the audience.
Thank you, Dr. Pradeepa, for an excellent presentation. Well articulated, you covered all the topics, all the aspects of joint commands. However, as a military man, I have a different view in with respect to singular command and control. In a ship, we have one captain at sea. There is nobody else. Similarly, in the command, you have a commander-in-chief. Western Naval Command is a single operational authority. The same applies to even a theater command, where ideally you should be having a single operational authority than a dual command, because it will only create ambiguities. And another fact is that when you have a dual command, and especially in this case where you have a political commissar who is there, the difference in perceptions of the commissar and the military man will be very much a big challenge to meet with. So I am of the view that the system followed in the United States, where you have the theater commands reporting to the defense secretary and to the president, that should be the ideal command and control chain. Well, notwithstanding, each of us have our own views, our perceptions based on our background. And moreover, one more observation is that, I think theater command in China is very much at a nascent stage. We are giving too much to China's capabilities, in my view. It's very easy to say that, the artillery brigade and the air force can integrate together. It does not happen like that in action. You have to have, operational experience. For that, China, has got no wartime experience, to be very, very clear, except for that duel with Vietnam. And you can't call Galwan as a war. It's nothing. It's just a border incursions. So the theater command, which is in shape, in position, and carrying out its objectives, is probably the United States currently. China is nowhere in the horizon to be, termed as a military which is, of some kind of relevance in joint operations, or for that matter, in a global stage. So that is my view. Anyway, I will open the session to the audience for their question and answers. MC, may please take over.
Okay, sir. So right now, there is a raised hand from Shubhadeep Mandal and another question in the chat box. Shall I take both and then ma'am can answer? Okay. The chat box question is from Nirmal Panda. The question is, how do you see WTC's war fighting capability in super high altitude areas along the borders with India? And Subhadeep Shah can ask this question by unmuting himself. Subhadeep sir. Sir, you can ask your question.
Shubhadeep, you are not audible.
Sir, you are not audible.
Okay. I think, Arfina, you can go ahead with the next question.
Ma'am, right now there is only one question. The Nirmal Panda's question, which I have read out recently.
Dr. Pratibha, would you like to answer that while we wait for Shubhadeep to connect?
Yes, sure.
Yeah, thank you.
So I would just like to clarify that I'm not saying that China has a joint operations capability or a theater command. The capability is not as good as the United States. I do agree with that. That's why China has faced military modernization goal, which talks about 2035 and 2049 to have a world-class military by 2049. So even the Chinese believe that they can have a world-class military only by 2049. So obviously, as of now, China is not at the level of the United States. And I think the dual system is something to do with the Chinese political system. So we have to also keep in mind that the Chinese PLA or the leadership over the PLA is influenced by Chinese political system. So political commissars are part and parcel of their military, and which reflects their political system. So I don't think the Chinese can follow something similar to the United States, where the army, or like let's say the military, like the Indian military, is apolitical. Chinese PLA is not an apolitical organization. It is very much political. So it has different political system. So their organization reflects such a reality. So we have to keep, I think we have to keep that in mind. Whether that can impede their ability to conduct operations, as you said, we have to wait and watch in a situation where they actually conduct, war, or they're in a war situation, we'll be much more able to, capable to assess their, capabilities. Come to the question of war fighting capabilities in high altitude areas, I believe that from 2015, China is increasing its training exercises in high altitude areas. So it has improved. It has improved in terms of before they used to focus only on acclimatization. But now they have improved to such a level that they are training in high altitude areas, and they have the requisite, capabilities, or let's say technologies or weapons, or, in terms of high altitude clothing. So they have been provided, they are modernized to such an extent that they can train there in high altitude areas, and they can position themselves there for a long period of time. And from 2020, what has happened is that these capabilities have improved because they've realized what they have lacked before. So they have constantly, or they are trying to seek lessons from what are their loopholes, and trying to integrate those, or trying to plug those loopholes, from 2020. So you can see an improvement. So in terms of fighting capability, yes, in terms of if they are training with, integrated training in high altitude areas, so obviously their capability has improved. Whether their capability has improved compared to the Indian forces, I think Indian forces are also, modernizing and, trying to, take lessons from 2020 and trying to plug those loopholes also. So we have to wait and watch. So this is what I would say. It has improved a lot. I can move on to the next question.
Hello, ma'am. I hope I am audible now. I'm Shubhadeep. Actually, that time I was facing some technical issue with the network. So my question, I have two questions. First is regarding the Indian perspective of the theater command. So does India possess any capabilities regarding theater command? If so, if the same, or it is something similar to that of theater command. Then talking of the theater command of PLA, so is there any other, as the commodore have mentioned, there are 5 theater command of PLA. So other theater command is also having some similar type of joint operation, or it's just the Western theater command? And since this theater command and co-joint operation has begun after 2015, so has there been any change within the doctrine of the military? And now coming to that joint cooperation between the wing section of the PLA and the army. So my question is that the CPC doesn't have a representation of the air wing of PLA. So does that have any issue regarding the joint cooperation between the different wings of the PLA in the theater command?
So a lot to unpack here. I think India should continue its military reforms. I would not like to dwell too much on the Indian side because I think the government is trying to implement theatrization within the Indian forces. So I think that's, I would say that that also recognizes some of the developments. I said the Chinese were saying that it follows certain developments which are happening, you know, in the world over. How the best militaries in the world are, you know, implementing reforms and what kind of reforms that they are implementing. So I think that there is an understanding between, you know, countries like India and China that their military forces should also catch up with the rest of the, you know, the best militaries of the world and implement certain implement major reforms in those areas, which includes theatrization. So I would leave it out with that. But when it comes to the Chinese theatrization, you were asking about
I will just repeat the question regarding theater command is that since we are talking about the Western theater command and its joint cooperation capabilities, so is just the Western theater command that is working for the joint cooperation capabilities or all other theater commands are working on the same direction?
So yes, all theater commands are working in that same directions because after Xi Jinping came, there is a tremendous focus on developing joint operational capability. This is something they have released just the joint operational trial in this year, November 2022. So this is going to be the mainstay of the PLA, the way they are fighting war. So all theater commands are following it. All theater commands are implementing this strategy. In fact, the theater command was formed in order for the PLA to fight joint warfare. So that's why the keeping that in mind, the theater command was implemented. So they had already decided that this is the kind of war that PLA is going to fight in the future. All the organizational, reforms, whether it is military education, whether it's NCOs, whether it is, civil military integration, they're all focused on developing joint operational capability. So it is the mainstay of how the PLA is going to fight wars in the future. So it's not just about WTC. Why I say WTC is different because I believe compared to other theater commands, the PLA army exerts a bit more influence, considerable influence over how the operation is being planned. So because the Tibet and the Xinjiang military district has an elevated status, this is very unique to the WTC, as I said, because of the geography and the terrain and the long borders, threat perception. So it's very, a different ball game in compared to the other theater commands. So in some ways, it's a bit different. But otherwise, all theater commands are implementing the theater command itself is a joint operational command. So they're all implementing such measures.
There was my last question. That is in CPC, the representation from the PLA's three wing, the ER command doesn't have such representation in CPC. With respect to the army wing, they have their commander within the CPC. So does it makes any contradict with their operational capabilities?
You mean to say CPC, or CMC?
CPC, ma'am, Chinese Communist Party. They have the representation from the PLA army, but I believe that the ER wing doesn't have a representation in that. So does it make any scenario a bit complicated in that respect?
No, I don't think so. I think when you read the literature, I don't see such a contradiction. They're very clear about what kind of operations or what kind of operational capability that they have to develop. I would say Air Force plays a very big role in terms of operational planning. So I would not see such contradiction. Because you will see more and over the last decade or so, you see the Air Force and the Navy playing a much bigger role in terms of contributing and in terms of having a say in how an operation is being planned or how they're going to execute an operation, what kind of role that each services can play. So I would not say that. I think it is based on their assessment of the threat perceptions that they face, the capability of the adversary and the physical, the advantage that they would have in terms of geography and terrain. So these are the things which are going to decide. They have what they would call as engineered thinking. So they have a complete understanding. They're trying to have a complete understanding on those issues and come up with solutions. So I would not see such contradiction.
Hello, ma'am. There are a few questions in the chat box and one raised hand by Alka, ma'am. So if you want, I can read out all the questions together and then take Alka ma'am's question and then you can answer, if it's okay for you.
Sure, sure.
So the first question is from KK Venkat Raman. His question is, can you cover the PLA strategic support force contributes or support joint operations?
The PLA strategic support
ma'am,
force...
Ma'am, there are a few no. others.
Okay.
If... Mukesh Kumar, question about requesting.
It's okay if you say one question and let her respond to each question, because I see that they are quite different and one of those questions is in fact addressed to the Commodore. So
yes, ma'am.
I think what I suggest is read out the questions, let Pratibha answer, and then ask the question to the Commodore at the end of all the questions. I can come in at the end if there's time, not her issue.
Okay, ma'am.
So yeah, Pratibha, you could respond to that question she read out.
Okay, so obviously the PLA strategic support force was formed in order to support the joint operations, whether it is communications, whether it is cyber, whether it's electromagnetic, warfare capabilities. They play a huge role in support. These support units are part of the training exercises. So they form a major role. So there's they contribute hugely to the joint operations capability. For example, when I say they're trying to see how to use offensive and defensive tactics, that's only possible if they have a huge support force units who can give them data and who can give them options for both offensive and defensive tactics. It's not possible without the support units. So they play a huge role in the joint operations of the PLA. So as I said, as they reduce the innovation gap, have 5G technology, so it is going to increase. It's going to play a big role. It's a major. It is part of their joint operation strategy. So that's all I can say.
Okay, I'm sorry to come in again, but this is a different issue. Pratibha, is there a very interesting ray of sunlight coming from your left-hand corner and it's sort of coming across your face in a rainbow kind of
okay.
It's rather distracting. It's less now. Earlier on, it was a very strong ray of light. I think it's gone now. All right. Now we are clear. Okay. But made for a very interesting picture. Sorry.
I think we can take Alka ma'am's question now and then proceed to with other questions in the chat box.
No, carry on. Mr. Vinay Jasrotia, please read his question.
Okay. There is a question from Mukesh Kumar. He asks requesting comments on WTC's airstrip at Purang, Ali Prefecture.
So I can't give you specific, information on the Purag airstrip. But what I can say is that, as I said, one of the WTC's priority is to establish air superiority. So it is one of their, strategies. I believe that. So for that, physical infrastructure is quite important. So they are improving the, air capabilities or air infrastructure in the WTC, which also includes all these prefectures, small, you know, greater air connectivity, greater physical connectivity, and they have their support. They call it, it's not the support unit as the strategic support force, but they have the security support unit, which makes sure that many of these projects are on time and done according to the requirements of the WTC. So you would see an expansion or continuous expansion in terms of this, you know, air infrastructure, physical infrastructure, in order to have better coordination or better reaction time for the PLA. So you will see this in the coming years, I would say.
Okay, ma'am. So the next question is from Vinay Jasrotia. He asks, level of informatization achieved in PLA is an important measure to assess the joint operation capability of PLA. As per your research, how does this factor impinge on PLA's joint operation capability?
So the PLA has... you know, if you take the you know, the doctrinal changes, you will see that local wars under information conditions, now you have informationized wars that you are being fought. So informationalization is an important aspect. Now the Chinese are PLA is carrying out informationalization of its units. So they are looking at major, like important units first, where they can do it. If you see combined arms units, obviously you'll see far greater informationalization. So it depends on how fast they are able to achieve, depending on how fast they're able to look at their science and technology, you know, innovation rate. I would say it's based on that. So if they're able to capitalize on their civilian, you know, industry and integrate the civil-military fusion and make the military take advantage of what's happening in the civilian infrastructure, civilian industry, so this capability is going to improve. So, but it depends on overall science and technology capability of China and how the military can then benefit from this, you know, civilian industry. I can't really say that to give you an idea of how far they have achieved, but you would see that they have achieved in several units. You will see that, I would say it's uneven. It's not even across the units. It depends on the what generation weapons and equipments that they have. In some units you have you know, updated equipment, or some units you have very sophisticated equipment and weapon system. Let's say if you take the Navy, you have very sophisticated weapons. So it depends on service to service, unit to unit, you know, so it depends on that and the kind of personnel that they have. Like, so if you take, like, there is an emphasis on recruiting university students, university graduates, you know, to be recruited so that they can handle this, you know, highly sophisticated weapons. So it depends on so many factors. The teaching, you know, the teaching such complicated complicated syllabus to the in military academies. It depends on the level of you know, education level of, let's say, NCOs who are mostly operating such equipment. It depends on in which units they were able to you know, integrate and adapt much faster, in what kind of units they were not able to adapt much faster. So you will see in certain units they have, like, adapted faster and implemented faster, and you see the differences in terms of in exercises. You will see that, okay, certain units are performing better, but you will also see that, okay, maybe certain units are not performing you know, as much as they would like to. So I would say it's uneven. It's very difficult to give an idea as to how it has progressed, but I would say that we have to keep in mind the timeline that the Chinese leadership has given the PLA. So we have to keep in mind that the complete modernization will take by 2035. This is a timeline which they have given. So we have to keep that in mind. to see how whether the progress is happening according to the timeline. Instead of, by 2035, we might be able to, give a more accurate understanding of whether the informationalization has progressed to an extent that many units or most of the units can now, have very efficient joint operational capabilities. So that's how I would put it.
Okay, ma'am. So there is a question on our YouTube channel from Bala Subramaniam. The question is to Commodore, sir. He asked, can you please elaborate more on the traitor command in China when you mention it as a nascent stage? I think we can take Alka ma'am's question as well.
Yeah. Am I to answer this question now, or you want me to wait?
No, you answer, Commodore.
For every side of the coin, there are two sides, you know. So I will say, practically, that the Chinese Theater Command is more of a joint service command. The concept of Theater Command, as I mentioned in my earlier part of the presentation, is more geographic in nature, which means the power structure has to flow out into the outside the borders of a particular country. Then it becomes a theater command in true sense. Otherwise, it's merely a joint service command, if you ask my honest view. And I've done a fair amount of study on this subject as well. If you see the American system, there's a system that I studied. The entire Goldwater Nichols Act, which theaterized the American command system to theater commands, was based on the Mahanian philosophy of sea power, which the Americans followed it after the Second World War by setting up overseas bases, one, by developing power production capabilities, having expeditionary capabilities, having logistics bases around the globe, and having providing security umbrella to allies as far as the South China Sea. So that is what a theater command is all about. Now, when we talk about China, where their command structure does not flow out of the borders, it is merely a joint operation, joint services command. That's the reason why I said that it is a nascent stage. Once they develop overseas bases, a network of overseas bases, once they have a need to provide security umbrella to allies elsewhere, these are the strategic imperatives which actually form into or converge into the theater command system as such. As of now, they have one military base at Djibouti. Other than that, they do not have any single overseas base. So a theater command can rest on its pillars, provided they're able to project the power of all the services in a particular geographic area of the globe. At the moment, China does not have that capability. They're integrating their armed forces to joint operations. That's all I can say. But a theater command, definitely not the right term. China may call it a theater command because they like to ape the United States. But practically speaking, it is a joint services command. That's the reason why I said that China is very much in a nascent stage as far as a theater command goes. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. I think now we can take Alka ma'am's question.
All right. Mine will obviously take the discussion into a slightly less technical area. I mean, I've been listening with a great deal of interest because this is all extremely outside my normal kind of
field of vision as well and understanding. I'd like to get back to the point you had started to mention and briefly in your first response, Pratibha, when you were talking about the political aspect of the PLA. See, I'm not trying to sort of take you into what is the kind of political indoctrination that takes place. My question is more about the overall ethos of the PLA, which has always been guided by the party must control the gun, and that the PLA's primary objective is the defense of the system. You know, it's not so much in terms of defense of the state, but would you say now that we are looking at far less politicized, more technical, more inspired by competition with other fighting units across the world, particularly in terms of their major competitor, the US. And so that aspect is now slowly becoming the more dominant one, whereas the PLA's political sense or the idea of the PLA's the political importance of the political for the PLA, would you say that that is on a decline in any way, or how is it being dealt with now?
Thank you for that interesting question, ma'am. I would say that PLA is still political in the sense that I don't think that PLA is an apolitical organization. Even under Xi Jinping, such discussions were there, but I think it's been put to rest that PLA is not an apolitical organization. It cannot be non-political. It is. It has to be absolutely loyal to the party. So the political system, I would say, has not changed. What has changed is that always, historically, whenever there was large-scale modernization, there was always this apprehension that professionalization of the PLA would mean that PLA would become, truly professional in terms of other countries like the US or India, that it would become apolitical. But in the way in which the military reforms have been implemented, the way in which the political leadership of the PLA has been reformed. So if you see the CMC or the dual command system, it's fully under the CMC, and CMC is headed by Xi Jinping. So I would not say that PLA is becoming like other countries. I would say that, in fact, PLA is becoming more and more tied to the party in terms of how the party is able to establishes control over the PLA, how it has been able to implement the reforms. If you look at the national defense in the new era, it is fully tied to Xi Jinping thought. So the PLA has to carry out, PLA has to help the party in realizing its goals. The PLA is an anchor in which China can realize its China dream. So all these goals of the party, objectives of the party, PLA plays a very big role. PLA is, when they say that a strong army dream of a strong army, this is how the party wants the PLA to function, to help the party to achieve its goal. So in no way or in any form or another, you can see that the party is becoming like other militaries of the world. The PLA is becoming like the other militaries of the world. I would not say so. I think under the Xi Jinping, there is much more effective control, ideological control over the PLA, and the way in which the modernization is undergoing, and the way in which the military reforms have been implemented, there is a tighter connection between how the PLA is being modernized, prepped for war, the way in which the reforms were pushed through the PLA. It is in line with the party's vision. So I would say that it still remains the same, more so now.
Yes, thank you. Thank you. That was a very, very interesting and comprehensive response to my question. Thank you.
Thank you.
Ma'am, as of now, there are no questions in the chat box.
Okay. I think everybody is just letting what you have spoken about, Pratibha, to sink in. They're sort of grappling with what is there. So Commodore, maybe you could just wrap up this session with your concluding remarks.
Thank you, ma'am. I mean, I'm sure all of you will agree with me that it's an excellent presentation by Dr. Pratibha. She's covered a whole lot of aspects, political and military both, and also answered all the questions in the chat box and otherwise very lucidly. Clearly shows the kind of research that has gone in to this presentation. And, you know, as always, interesting perceptions are always worth, you know, further discussions. And I will leave it at that. And I'm sure the audience also would have, you know, benefited a lot from this session. Thanks once again, the audience, for your patient listening. And thank you, Dr. Pratibha.
Thank you.
Thank you, Alka ma'am. Thank you so much for giving this opportunity.
Yes, once again, thank you, the organization, for giving me such an opportunity. And thank you so much, Professor Alka Acharya. And thank you, Commodore Menon, for your wonderful remarks.
Well, as the host institute, we are extremely grateful for your presentation and your chairing, sir, because we are the gainers, and so are the audience that come to listen to us. And it's always a pleasure to have students, former students who have now reached a point where they are acknowledged experts to come and, you know, give us the benefit of their hard work and research. So thank you once again, all of you. And well, I think it's time to close the session.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Ma'am, Rapai sir has written something in the chat box. He said that it's for everyone, but we can't see the question. Rapai sir, if you would like to ask the question, maybe you can unmute or...
He is not in the meeting.
Rapai ji has left?
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, well. Now, I've just gone through the chat and I see, yes, he just wrote, this is for everyone, and then there was nothing else. Well, let's assume that he said, thanks, and this is for everyone.
Yeah, I know.
So who's concluding the session now?
Arpina.
Yeah, Arpina. Yeah.
Okay. With this, we would wrap the session, and we thank all the participants for their for participating in this seminar and giving us their valuable time. The video of today's discussion will be available on the ICS YouTube platform. We would like to welcome everyone for the next Wednesday seminar. We at the ICS conduct seminar every Wednesday. Information related to the same will be available on our ICS website, or you could also subscribe to our newsletter for regular updates. Thank you.